Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And this is What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name's Jay Moran. Today, talking about the Buffalo School Board. Of course, the election coming up tomorrow. Now, we're, of course, airing this on Monday, the day before Election Day. And with us, we have Jennifer McCosey, the West District Board member since 2016. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. I'm interested to find out a little bit more about the districts. Always great to have a chance to talk to people who are, you know, on the ground, so to speak, in the neighborhoods of Buffalo. And we do learn a lot from that. But before we went on the air, you talked about, and this is interesting, this is one of the first elections, if not, in fact, the first, where the school board is in the November election, right? So it's going to be a busy election, especially in the city of Buffalo with the mayoral race. So it's a very different dynamic for the school board.
Yes, this is the second time that the school board, for the district races.
Okay.
So 2022 was the first time that we were on the ballot in November. Our races were in May. Previously, I don't know how far back that dates, but I know when I first came on, they were May elections. And yeah, just reiterate how we knew who was coming out to vote in May. We knew because it was strictly the school board election.
They were focused on education.
It was an education focused vote. And I've always been baffled. I guess the overarching reason is because numbers were low, turnout was low. And, you know, I get it in that sense. But at the same time, I feel like if the challenge had been put out in a real way, you don't get some numbers, we're going to move you to November.
Right.
As a organizer at heart, I would have led a campaign to make sure that we weren't in November. The school board is a nonpartisan race, and it becomes political very quickly, and it loses the essence for what it should be, which is our BPS community, our students and families and staff. And no matter where you come from, no matter your political beliefs, this is focusing on what we need for our youth and not just the youth. Yes, we student outcomes are, you know, in the governance training we took on, student outcomes are the reason that we do the work that we do as the board and how we hold a superintendent accountable. But everyone from every, you know, all 11 bargaining units to all of our staff, to the students, to their families, you know, we need to pay attention to their needs and how we can resource them. And now we're kind of, for the people who have taken the chance to step out and be a leader, for those who have been in place, the political process itself is already a lot. Then now we are, it's almost taxing to know that you're at the very bottom of the ballot to the right.
Yeah, you're just saying, you're saying that. So, and we're right in the middle of, while this is airing, of course, on the Monday, the day before Election Day, we're in the middle of early voting as we record. So let's talk about that. And you made a point of this. The ballot is going to be very different here for people who are looking for that school board vote on this year. But have you heard from people about it already, about going for early voting? Have you gotten any response from anybody saying anything about what they're experiencing?
Yeah, so you want to be out there in the polls and make sure you're visible. And I haven't been there every day, but, you know, we have to have some folks there. And what I'm hearing myself, what, you know, is being reported back to me is that people didn't see the names they were looking for.
Oh.
So some, you know, admittedly said we couldn't find you. Well, that's because we were at the bottom of the ballot.
Bottom of the ballot.
Every ballot has a school board candidate, whether they are running on a solo. You also have the opportunity to write in. So anybody who's listening, you will have a school board choice at the bottom of your ballot. But again, most people aren't looking that far down. So right. That's a challenge. In my particular race where there's three candidates, myself included, every vote really does count. That's not just a tagline because, because if you don't look down and then they've already cast their vote by the time they come out and talk to you. So you missed out on a vote because people didn't see us.
Right.
I myself, you know, it's a lottery to see where you're placed on the ballot. And I am the last name at the bottom of the ballot in the right-hand corner.
You didn't win
for
the lottery.
West District. No, I did not win the lottery. But, you know, again, if we did our jobs and, you know, we did right, then people should know just to look down. And we also are coming across, I don't even know if it's a real issue because it was well publicized that the Buffalo Public Schools, we went through a redistricting process.
Right.
And it was a good year and a half process, but it did change the lines a bit. So, you know, it's very easy. And I myself was taken aback because I have the new map, but, you know, I let it slip that there's certain areas where I have relationships that are now in the central district. Those are votes I was counting on, you know?
Right.
So it's very, interesting, sure. I guess I would say right now for
sure.
us.
I can appreciate that. And the fact that you're saying interesting instead of maybe some of the other adjectives you've had
yeah,
in experience.
Yeah, it's getting close. The day is approaching. It's been quite the experience. And I'm just ready for the 4th. Regardless of the outcome, I'm just ready.
You know, you said that you hope you've done well by people and that people understand that. But at the same time, and this is going to be, I hope we can get some revelation of sorts here, but how should a school board member be judged?
That's, wow, it's a loaded question because it's a good question. I'm at the point now where I don't pull any punches with answers. So
right.
This will be an adventure for us both.
So I'll duck. I can duck. I won't
no,
punch
No,
that.
No, no. I would never disrespect, but the real is, it is what it is.
Right.
So a school board member should be judged. And I don't even want to say should be, because everybody has their own take on people.
Right. But I guess, I mean, how can we evaluate our school board member? I guess that's what we want to know.
I think that if you are looking at someone based on their record, you know what I mean? You still have to take into consideration a voting record that you need some background. Data doesn't explain it if you don't know the story behind it. And a lot of times, in that same vein, the story is never always what it seems.
Right.
You know, so I think for myself, what I'm hoping people would see is that I do not shy away from conflict. I stand strong for what I believe in. I have literally lost support because people, you know, oh, I voted for you, so you should do this. Absolutely not. That's not how this works. You know, I contributed to your campaign, so you should do this. Absolutely not. Thank you for contributing, but I have a job to do, and I'm one of nine. We have to, and yes, the Buffalo Board of Education is well known for butting heads and all of that. But to your point, if you judge us by that alone, but you don't judge the fact that we'll come out of most votes unanimously, then that means that you're not seeing that we will battle it out. We won't see eye to eye on a personal level. You take nine people from different walks of life, all different ages, from different sides of town, and then put them in a room and say, get along for the sake of the kids in the district. You know, again, know, as I stated, I have children, grandchildren in the district. That my daughter's a teacher. She was a valedictorian. Like, I take very seriously my role because my family is affected.
Right.
And everyone who's on the board has grandchildren or children or somebody who's in the district or who has been part of the district. So we all are very passionate people. And I say all that to say, we will go behind closed doors and we might battle it out, but we'll come out with unanimous votes. Or if we don't vote unanimously, case in point, the budget, we had opposing views on some things and it wasn't a unanimous vote, but it passed. And we're still carrying on. No one's at each other's throats about it because it's the work, right? So I would really like people to judge us on the work. Check out a board meeting. And I will say this 100 times during this, Buffalo is one big living room. Everybody knows everybody. And if you're willing to just listen to what somebody might say about somebody negatively, but don't do the research to see if that person's really who they're depicting that person to be, then you're not making the judgment. Someone made it for you and you're following their lead. So you need to question yourself. That's exactly what I would say. So many people are, you know, just hold so much disdain for somebody they never even spoke a word to.
Right.
And it's just because a narrative was put out there by someone who maybe just don't like people who don't deal with their crap.
Well stated.
So, yeah.
Jennifer McCosey with us here on What's Next, West District board member, and of course, running for re-election this year. Let's talk about the West District.
Okay.
This is where I'm, when we had an opportunity to talk with you, I was hoping we can get and just a picture of somebody who's there on the ground representing this district. And it is really fascinating to go around the city and see how it's changed, how it is changing, and in some cases, how parts of the city are thriving. Talk about the West Side.
So the West Side, I am 54 and I was born and raised on the West Side. And I, you know, I'm one of those folks where people will look at me and just assume I am all these things, you know,
right.
Different cultures and nationalities. I am an Italian Filipino and I grew up in Italian with my father.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, growing up, it was a very kind of close-knit, neighborhoods were very close-knit, you know, you're home was owned by someone you know, or you owned it, and it was passed down through family, which is a very different makeup from what it is now. And I have my own opinions and would never publicly broadcast them. But, you know, there was kind of a mass exodus.
Sure.
Early 80s, we fell into that mass exodus. We left in 85, after I graduated, I went to school 19, Native American. It wasn't Native American Magnet School then, it was public school number 19.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad we were able to rename it for the culture and the beauty that was going through that school. And I graduated from school 77 and we moved to Angola.
Mm.
Yeah. And I went to high school in Angola. And I learned early on how schools are resourced, how curriculum was being taught. My father, to this day, I understand, but I didn't when we moved, is I was your typical teenager and I skipped a class here and there. But he held me back in ninth grade, even though I had graduated 77. He had said the curriculum and the learning out there, you're going to end up in a bad situation. You need to step back. I'm going to do this. And I didn't understand it. I should have graduated in 1989. I graduated in 1990, and I realized in the early 2000s why he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was sixth grade science in the Lakeshore School District was actually taught in ninth grade in Buffalo.
Oh.
So it was knowing now that suburban districts and other districts around us are funded through taxpayers, are funded through property tax. So everyone has a say in what comes in and out of those schools, how it's funded, where resources are being allocated. And in Buffalo, we're state and federal funded. We're part of the Big Five. And it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference as to how much we get in. You know, we get funding. We are $1 billion a year budget, and that's literally double the size of the cities. But we still struggle because of all of the other factors.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we cannot rely on, you know, raising taxes or whatever. Our funding is our funding, and that's it, regardless of the situations we're going through. So when you talk about the West Side, the 14213, the diversity in that zip code alone is compared to Detroit.
Okay.
You know, Buffalo is in the top five of the most impoverished cities in the nation. And we renamed two of our high schools. Lafayette is now Lafayette International. What was previously Grover Cleveland is now International Prep. The names speak for themselves.
Right.
There is like a literal in the 80s, the amount of languages that are spoken in our buildings. And because of the mass exodus, it opened up vacancy. Vacancy rate went from nil to a lot in a small period of time. So that left opportunity for management companies and refugees and immigrant settlement companies to come in. And you have really great organizations out there. And you have one of my opponents is the executive director of HEAL. And it's a wonderful organization. And he's working in tangent with the students. And I respect the work that's being done. And you partner with these folks as a board member. And you get to know all these cultures. And this is the beauty of the West Side now. Mm. We are such a melting pot of just beauty. And I would love to see the silos come down. And there's a cultural kind of event. Can't remember, Taste of Diversity, I think it's called, over the summer. But we need more of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've been lax in trying to make that happen as a political leader in the city. But the West Side is full of just beauty, but we need to realize that gentrification is real. It's happening. It has happened on the West Side. It's happening in our city. And we're pushing folks out. You know, you do have those landlords and companies who slap paint on a building because affordable housing went up on one corner. I used to work with Push Buffalo. Affordable housing happens. It's there. It is affordable. But it also brings the property values up.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have people who are like, oh, okay, I know that's a mouse hole there. Let me just patch that up. And now that apartment that was 800 is now 15.
Right.
And just deal. So we have to be better at allocating our resources across the district. It's a struggle in the West District, but we have the multilingual program now. And we're really looking to service the whole child and use that approach, which includes housing and food distribution and, you know, social emotional wellness. And the whole city is dealing with that. So I guess a really super long answer to the West Side is all of that.
You know, it was a great answer and most certainly exploratory. I feel like I maybe got you off the subject matter, which of course is the school board. And we're down to probably like 5-7 minutes to go in our conversation. So I want to make sure that we get to that. Talk about just being on the board. What is a week, a day like for Jennifer McCosey?
It's emails. It's phone calls. A school board member needs to be accessible and also needs to realize that you do not run the district. So, you know, when phone calls come in, did you talk to the principal if it's an issue with the student? Did you go through admin? Okay, well, if you did not, that's where you need to go first. Come to me if you've explored all the other options and nothing got done. We are the most far removed from the actual situations that are happening. So I would love for the community to know that we're the first board, as far as I know, to ever go through governance training. And it really opened the door to making sure we focus on student outcomes, which should be more than 50% of what we do.
Right.
Right. So we also are fiduciary. That $1 billion budget is for us to approve with the superintendent's suggestions. You know, all nine of us are basically the superintendent's boss, And we want to make sure he has everything he needs to service the schools. But we're also, six of us are responsible for a good chunk of those schools. We are the named board member. So we have to be in tune to what's happening. I'm currently conducting my listening tour with my schools, which consists of making sure the admin can give me anything they'd like to give. But you're also brag about your school. And I demand at this point, I speak to a student. They can choose that student, but I would like that student to choose other students to sit at that table.
Okay.
And I bring to their attention ahead of time the six things or the three things that are really we're focusing on, such as like transportation, safety, attendance. These things we're really honing in on. But I've also heard that we got to do better in lunches. So, tell me what you want to talk about. I want to know if you have a concern, but I also want to know what you love in your school. What's the legacy you want to leave? And how do you want to make it a better day for the next class coming up behind you? And it's been going pretty well. And then I uplift that school for a day on my socials, and the listening is important.
You know, Jennifer, we talked before we went on the air, and if you're busy, not only, your full-time job and your family, but also not just being on the school board, but obviously running a campaign in a three-person race. So I feel this sense that you're a little tired, but at the same time, just as you were talking about your listening tours, the sparkle came into your eye.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess my final question is, do you love being on the school board?
I do. I love the challenge. If there's anybody who knows me, knows I'm totally down for a challenge. And I'm a different person. I've always been someone who will be in your face if you're not doing right, especially by my family or by my community. It's what I'm known for. But, there was a growth in this, and it's great stuff. I honestly wasn't going to run again. I was not going to run again. I love it, but I'm a leader. You're supposed to step back and let someone else lead. The only reason that I chose to run again, and my opponents have every right to be upset because they did ask me if I was going to run, and I had said no. But the superintendent had, retired suddenly. We had to get a new one in. That's a process. The COVID funds depleted, $78 million deficit. That's insane. We have, the allegations against the district where the board became courageous, and now we're investigating our own district. How irresponsible would it be to not set my successor up for success and be that person's constituent and watch them struggle with all of this and the learning curve of being on a board? Because it's not easy to deal with everything coming at you.
You're telling me experience counts.
Oh, experience does. It does count. But that's, it isn't like, oh, I know what I'm doing, so no one else should run. Let me just lay the groundwork so you're good. That's what I was trying to tell, but it's not about me. Yeah, I personally love being on the board because you're able to go around and really talk to people. It's not about the title. You have the autonomy to really get out there as opposed to just like, hey, how you doing? How's your school? You know what I mean?
Right.
What's somebody going to think then? But I've had struggles on the board. I don't always get along with everybody. I speak my mind. People speak their minds. We may not get along personally, but I love the challenge of just getting it done regardless of the personal. And, a lot of ugly surfaces in some of our meetings, but we still get the job done. I'm so proud of that. I just want to make sure that people don't have to deal with the things that are really earth-shattering. If we didn't choose the right superintendent, if we don't set him up, then you're going to be handling a lot that you shouldn't be. We went through this training. We're still going through the training as a board. And then I simultaneously took an individual track of that training because I wanted to make sure I was grasping, all of the material. And, that was a choice that I didn't take lightly because I really didn't have the time, but I had to make time. It was important. I had been on the board for 7 years at this point, so I needed to make sure that I was doing it right. And it's all I want to do, set the next person up for success.
Well, Jennifer, we'll remind people if they want to vote for you, you got to go down to the bottom right hand side.
Bottom of the ballot, right hand side. If you want to vote for any school board candidate in any district, bottom of the ballot. there will be somebody there.
Find it. It's important.
It is important. It is important.
Jennifer McCosey, the West District Board Member for the Buffalo Board of Education on the ballot this year. I so appreciate you coming in and talking to us on What's Next.
Well, thank you for having me.
Jennifer McCosey, Buffalo School Board Member since 2016, with us on What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran. We move on in today's program, and we go to the east side, Sycamore and Mortimer Streets, as a matter of fact, the home of the Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology, also known as BCAT. We get a tour of their facility with their executive director, Gina Burkhardt.
BCAT has been around for 12 years.
Okay.
And we were started, modeled after Manchester Bidwell, which is a program out of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
That runs an adult workforce program.
Right.
In combination with an after-school high school program.
Okay.
And you ask, why would you do both? And part of it is really to bridge the generation, but also the wealth gap. So youth who don't have resources in the community can come here, gain technical skills, academic supports, mental health supports, graduate from high school with a portfolio and a career focus. Adults come to do workforce development training in allied health careers, IT careers, and landscaping careers. And the goal is that you can't sort of undo generational poverty if you don't attack it from both sides. So youth gain access to a future, right? Go on to college. 100% of our high school seniors have gotten into the college of their choice for the last 3 years. And 85% of our adults graduate, get certified, and head toward jobs that pay well over $45,000.
Wow.
So, majority of our adults are women. Majority are women of color. And most come in with being either unemployed or underemployed and incomes under $17,000.
That's such a big jump, though, for an adult to do that, right? I mean,
jump to
decide, I want to go back to get some sort of schooling.
So you know why they do it? Because they have children, and they have families, and they want a better life for themselves and their kids. And I think we all know that in Buffalo, opportunities have been few and far between for this side of the community, and we're providing those opportunities. And when they graduate, they do get jobs. They buy houses, right? They stay in Buffalo. They find a new path forward.
So how many between the high school and the adults, how many are attending?
About 300 a year. Wow. So we have about 50 to 60 youth that come every day after high school. But then this year we'll graduate 200 adults across all of our programs.
Wow.
And all of our training is cost-free. So they come, they can take the training. We provide food, we provide transportation support, and their certification exam. So the Allied Health, they get National Health Association certification, and our IT get CompTIA certification, which makes them really job ready and job worthy.
Right. Now, so you mentioned free of charge, so what is the funding model here?
It's challenging, especially now.
Complex and challenging.
Yeah, so, you know, for the most part in the past, we've done fully grant-funded kinds, so we wrote lots of grant applications. But I'm sure you know, in Buffalo, it's getting harder and harder, and the competition for funds is greater and greater. When we moved into this building, we inherited a $4.5 million renovation cost. So we're right now in the throes of an $8 million capital campaign, which a lot of it will go for the cost of the building, but a lot of it will also be sort of foundational support for program. And we still do a lot of grant writing. And we now have a community of donors. I mean, the great thing about Buffalo, it is a city of good neighbors. And it's been a very generous community to us. So we've raised about $5 million so far.
And here we are at the corner of Sycamore and Mortimer. What was this building before?
It was the forge industry. It was a manufacturing company. It was empty for 40 years. Our neighbors dealt with the rats and all of the sort of abuse of this building. So they're so happy that we're here, and they've welcomed us with open arms. This is the Pratt-Willard District, which is you know, one of the oldest black communities in Buffalo. And as you can see, it's really beautiful and welcoming. So, and they now do their block clubs here.
Oh.
And the Jam Block Club also does their...
Do you have other community events like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so... Oh, you missed it. Oh. So last Saturday, we had a community resource event. We had over 300 community members come through and 32 vendors all over here and downstairs helping our community identify the resources, especially now with SNAP funding ending, like where can they access more and, you know, cost-free food for themselves and their families. Legal Services was here. Health equity organizations were here. So we had Feed More's food bus was here, which I was really happy about. And then the UB Health bus was here doing blood pressure and other sort of checks.
Do you want to
come out,
walk around? Sure.
So the great thing about this building is where we were before, it was on Main Street, and it was not in a neighborhood. And this building had been targeted for Bitwise, which was a tech organization that was coming into the community. They had leased this building with Jamal Douglas, and they folded. Oh. And when they folded, they left him high and dry with the building. And so we swooped in and said, can we see the building? And it was sort of the perfect space. In our old building, we only had three classrooms. Now we have many more individual classrooms. Each one holds a specific program. So, hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is our art studio.
Hi.
Sarah's our instructor.
Hi, good afternoon.
Pretty amazing, right? Yes. Again, this is our most attended class. Students that come in, some have art background and many don't. But when they leave, you can see that their work is quite amazing. They just finished a project with the Oshai Children's Hospital for their walls. They were commissioned to do this art. They went through three iterations because, you know, they learned to be rejected and to try again.
That's a great lesson.
It is a great lesson, right? And the art you see out here, the animal art, there were 10 of these that will now be hung in the hallways at Oshai Children's Hospital.
Oh, very nice.
Really
very
beautiful. Nice. But this is all of our youth art.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I know you've had exhibits on
here
before.
We have one in front.
Oh, in front. Yeah, okay.
This is our digital media lab.
Oh, wow.
So,
oh, cool.
This is all about videography and photography. They make documentaries. They just finished a documentary on Wilhelmina Godfrey, which was in the Buffalo International Film Festival, one of the films that was picked for review by one of our students. Well, a group of our students, actually. All of the equipment in this room, this beautiful, amazingly up-to-date room, was part of a grant we got from the Cummings Foundation.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of the equipment that you'll see both in the art and around the corner is all through grants.
Oh,
so
wow.
We have to work really hard.
Yes, right.
To get
right.
That
right.
Then it's an amazing space, right?
Oh, yeah, it's cool. It's bright. Yeah, it's nice.
Then we have a 3D printing class.
Oh.
And this is quite popular.
I bet.
And, again, this class was started with funding from the Ralph Wilson Foundation. So all of the 3D printers and the equipment here was part of that funding. This is one of our longest-standing programs, and we started it in partner with Buffalo Manufacturing Works, and we've just continued it on. The students in here not only do the software associated with 3D printing, but they do virtual reality, and now they're navigating through AI.
Wow. Wow, they can teach me.
I come in and I try to learn, but...
Right. So what do you see? I mean, the 3D printer, I mean, it kind of opens up the imagination.
Happened in here, which is an amazing story, is we had a student come in who didn't know exactly what he wanted to do and came into the 3D printing class, stayed with us for 4 years. He's now on full scholarship at UB in the School of Architecture.
Oh, my.
So it's a way for students who don't necessarily have opportunities for career exploration to see there's more than just this narrow band of opportunities, and it expands. We have another student from here who's in an engineering program at UB, and another student from our digital media class who's full scholarship, Canisius, on a leadership, in a leadership
Sure. So let me talk about the students, the younger students, then, yeah, for just a second. So how do they end up
here?
Here. I mean, so they're attending classes during the day?
They have to go to school.
Okay.
They are from Buffalo Public and Charter Schools. They're 9th grade through 12th grade. They come at 3:30. They have a little food. You'll see their kitchen. And they come to class from 4 to 6:30. We go into the schools to recruit, but mostly it's word of mouth.
Oh.
It's friends telling friends how wonderful this is. Parents who come to our adult program saying, oh, I want to send my, high school student here.
Okay, all right.
And when you talk to the student later today, or Akua does, you'll hear that it's a safe place, right? That right now there are a lot of sort of issues in the community around safety and sort of dealing with what's happening in the community. And they feel like they can come here and be themselves, their authentic selves, and be respected and not judged, but also not bullied.
Yeah, I did see that. I think it's right there on the opening page of the website about non-judgmental. I thought that was it. So, I mean, that's one of those words that's like interesting. I mean, it has a lot of meaning, I guess.
That is one of my favorite things about the youth program. So these students come in, and most times they don't know each other, and this camaraderie forms. And when we were on Main Street, what was interesting was that the Utica bus stop was right there, and a lot of kids went to the Utica bus stop, and it wasn't very safe.
Mm.
So they would walk together to make sure that everybody felt comfortable and safe. When they're here, they're in support of each other. And we heard from Lily just the other day that we asked her what was the biggest challenge of being here, and she said that the seniors graduate.
Oh.
Right? That they leave her. So it's a community of kids who face a lot of transition, but they find sort of the camaraderie and the consistency here with friends. And they they're judged everywhere else. And they come in here and they understand, you know what? These are my friends. These are my peers. We're going to hang out together.
And so each student here goes through an interview process?
So we're open to everybody.
Right.
All they have to do is fill out an application. We don't interview them.
Okay.
They have to have...
The adults,
adults go through.
Do. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
They have to have permission from their a guardian or an adult in their life, but that's the only requirement for the youth.
Yeah. Do they ever get referred here by the school district?
Yeah, and before COVID, that was the number one way, and then COVID sort of changed everything, and we're now just getting back to working with guidance counselors.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right,
and then... our kitchen.
Oh.
So we get 400 pounds of food from the food bank every month.
Oh, wow.
Free of charge. It's a backpack program, so the kids actually, we don't make their food for them. They come in and they have recipes, and they usually have a calendar of what they're going to eat every day. They make tacos. They sort of are very experimental in their food choices. They have to clean up when they're done, and they can take food home with them as a backpack program.
So when do the kids arrive here then?
3:30.
How long do they stay?
Till 6:30.
Uh-huh.
And we have to say, okay, time to go.
And how many days a week?
A week.
5 days?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's quite a commitment.
It's a big commitment.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Not all of them come every day.
Sure.
But because our classes right now run Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday. In January, it'll be all 4 days that they'll run.
All right.
This is our amazing recording studio.
Oh, cool.
It's a professional recording studio.
I like the way it sounds in here.
Yeah, right? So we have sort of a performance room and then a recording room. They make digital music, although this year they are now really into learning how to play the instruments.
Really?
It's completely shifted, yeah. They want to be working with the instruments themselves. Isn't that funny?
That is, and it's interesting, just kind of talking now between the two classrooms, there's this almost an organic... way of the of a way these classes develop to a certain extent.
Well, here's the other interesting thing. Before COVID, when we were in our other building, we were very much performance-based. So we had dance, and we had music, and we had theater, right? And then we had the art, and the we had photography and videography. And when COVID hit, we couldn't be in those close proximities to each other, so we actually completely shifted the classes that we offered. And we thought a lot about, really, what do we want to give our students? And we want them to have the technical expertise, the academic expertise, and then the social and civic expertise. So we've wrapped the program in these programs where they learn a lot of technical skills, but hidden inside of that is their access to academics and sort of social-emotional advancement, and sort of all of their projects are directed toward community-based understanding. So our kids know about, they did a video on Flint, Michigan, and the water disaster there. They've done things on the environment here. They did a whole documentary on emerging black women in the arts. So again, it's all about learning about their history and their community, because we want them to leave with a voice, and we want them to leave to give back.
And do you see that? Do you see that voice develop?
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh my God, these are fearless. These youth come in, they're so quiet when they come in. And by the time they're seniors, they are so willing to step up, give an opinion, and sort of fight for what they believe in, which, you know, is using their voice in the right way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of awesome.
It is.
It's really amazing. Hmm. So this is the youth floor.
Okay.
Now I'm going to take you up to the adult floor.
Oh, okay.
You'll see a big difference.
Big difference.
But while we're walking through here, this was our first big art gallery show. It's Monica Engel and Beth Monroe.
Okay.
And they're local artists. We will have another artist come in, a local black photography artist who will come in February and have a show. So our goal for this gallery is to rotate in local artists so we can get the community in, but then also our students, when they finish a trimester, this gallery becomes theirs.
Oh,
so they all contribute to a project-based gallery hanging.
All
you
right.
mind taking the stairs?
Not at all.
So now you'll see this is very different
right.
than our youth level, but it's very academic, it's very serious.
Okay.
So this is set up as classrooms because we wanted our adult students to come in and feel like they were in a comfortable academic space. All of the furniture on this floor was donated by Highmark, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
This class is medical administrative assistant class. It's done in partnership with Kaleida. So Kaleida came in and said, we have so many openings. Can you do the training? And we said, if you help us build the curriculum, we can do it. They hired all of our students from the first class.
Oh, wow.
So it's about having a training that is a pipeline right to an employer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Very good.
My bad dog. This is our tech class.
Okay.
So we offer four technology classes. And it's a progression. So people come in, they start with IT fundamentals, because what we learned when we started this program was we were only offering advanced classes. And again, it's a community that hasn't had the same opportunities as more privileged communities. So our students came in without any real foundation.
Right.
So we stepped back and said, let's build the foundation, start with IT fundamentals, then they can go into IT tech support, then they can go into networking, and then they can go into security. So they can leave here with four CompTIA certifications, which gives them real opportunities for being hired in the community. What we're finding is that our students are spread out, our tech students are spread out not just in big tech companies, but they're going into hospitals, they're going into call centers. One of them is working at the casino.
No.
Some of them are doing, we have a student who was laid off from the Sumitomo and came back to class, and she's now working in security at M&T.
Oh, excellent.
So
that's good.
And our adults, actually, most of the ways they get here is for us out in the community. We table, we go to churches, we do a lot of community events where we invite the community, because for the most part, it's hard to find out about programs
right
in Buffalo. So we have to do our work to get the word out.
Sure.
This is the vampire class.
Well,
so this is
as we talk on the night before Thanksgiving,
this is phlebotomy. Mm-hmm. Our students get an NHA certification. It's 120 hours. They have to do 100 blood draws to graduate, which is why I try not to walk by here.
Right.
And we have a 100-person waiting list.
Oh.
So it is a very popular class.
Yeah, there's that many opportunities.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So they're, okay. It's our favorite one.
All right.
This is our farm tech class. This is Jay Moran from WBFO. He's walking around.
Hi.
What do you think? Anybody want to say anything on the radio?
I've heard of you.
Oh, very good. No, thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Oh, good. Did you mind the interruption, or do you want me to stay here longer and then interrupt for longer? So long. Oh, very good. It's just like when I was in school. It's the same. Very nice. All right. So it was nice meeting you. Thanks for having us.
Okay.
You too.
Thanks, Marie.
Bye-bye.
So that is our longest class. It's 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, fellas.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good to see you.
They're here from 9:30 in the morning to 3:30 every day for 6 months. It's a big commitment.
Right. Right. What's that for?
Pharmacy technician.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it is a very rigorous class. They have to do a 5-week internship before they can graduate. And most of the time, they get hired out of their internship.
Oh.
So we try to place them someplace where they're really linked and connected, and then they usually get offered a job.
Oh, cool.
Which is
kind of
nice.
Nice.
This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. This portion of What's Next focusing on BCAT, the Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology. Just heard our tour with Gina Burkhart, getting a look at their facility. Now we have a sit-down with Gina Burkhart at her offices overlooking Sycamore Street.
So how did it come to pass that you ended up here, Gina?
So I was in work in D.C., and I got a call from a friend who was a recruiter, and she said, I am recruiting for a position in Buffalo for a small not-for-profit that does arts and technology and workforce. And she said, and she was out of Boston, and she said, I can't find anybody to take the job. And I said, well, I understand that. I'm like, Buffalo? It's cold. And I thought about it and called her back and said, I'll put my name in the hat for that. And I did. At the time, Robert Gioia and John Comell were doing the search, and the board interviewed me, and that's how I got here.
How long now?
8 years today.
Oh, today?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
My anniversary flowers for my staff.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to that.
Thank you. The day before Halloween. I don't know what that means. But
So what was your background then beforehand?
So mostly research and evaluation. Mm. So I worked at the American Institutes for Research and at Jobs for the Future. Big organizations for a long, long time. I was the CEO at Learning Point Associates in Chicago. And it was time to move away from being far away from the real work to doing the real work. And this has been the hardest and the best job I've ever had.
So when you say hardest, what do you mean by that? I mean, we talked about the funding model earlier, which
it's not even about funding. I think it's about the fact that this community has for so long lived this divided life, right? And when I came in and I had the opportunity to interact with our students and our adults and to learn the kinds of challenges that they face and what BCAT needs to do to ensure that when they come in, that we deliver to them the success they deserve. right? And that's the hard part, is that there are so many resources and things that go into that. Transportation is a problem in Buffalo. Child care is a problem. Housing is a problem, right? And all of that can't be remedied if people don't have good working careers that pay minimum, mid-skill wages. So accessing a community that sometimes doesn't visit the East Side and really understand what the challenges are, it's hard to get that message out.
So, but you have learned that in your 8 years here. You've learned about this community.
I have. I love them.
What can you tell us about? What do you want to tell? Like you were saying, people don't necessarily come in.
That I see the women and men who come into this program every day, and I think that I would not be strong enough to do what they do. They have children, right? They often don't have child care, right? And they don't actually have the information disseminated to them that they need to be able to just easily or even better move through their lives, right? Like for you and me, if we get a flat tire, not that hard to fix. For our students, if they get a flat tire, that means they miss classes for a week because they don't have the resources to fix the tire. So for us, we never want to focus on the deficits. We always want to focus on the assets for our students and to help them see that their strength and resilience is what gets them to their next step of success.
So there's lots of success stories. Inside those stories, do you see a theme, though, that reflects on what you've grown to understand about this part of the community?
Every day they face the same discrimination and racism that this city has sort of not been able to step above. And it is incredible to me that that continues to happen. I mean, again, the truth is that it is easier in life for many people, right? And so when it's not easy, it's really hard. Hmm. And that might sound stupid to say, but I don't even know how to explain some of the challenges that our students navigate better than seemingly possible. And they come every day.
Really?
They come every day. Well, our adults have to be here 90% of the time to graduate.
Okay.
So there's a real demand that they get here, and they do.
Wow. That's...
Yeah.
So I guess, kind of wrapping up, though, like we were talking about the complicated funding model and things along those lines. But, I see right on your website, tours available. It's obvious that you're welcoming not just this community, but everybody. But at the same time, what? Let's talk to everybody then, and what you want them to do when it comes to BCAT.
I think one of the things that we have not done well is make people in the community aware of BCAT, and that what we're doing is changing the economics in the community, right? And so I want everybody to know that our work is really critically important, more so now than ever before. That we're putting careers into the hands of folks who haven't had the opportunity to get into careers. And with what's happening with government funding and federal funding and local funding going away, more than anything, people need to feel like they can have the opportunity to get a job, to be happy in the job, to be able to support themselves and their family. And I think unless you actually open your eyes and see that in the community, it's really easy to pretend it's not happening. Our goal is to put every single person who graduates from our adult program into a career. But we want to make sure that the careers we offer are market-driven. So right now, we're in the throes of looking at starting an accounting finance class because we know there's a huge need for sort of bookkeeping accounting. We also know that in our community of folks who come to talk to us about training, that they don't have that background in the same way they didn't have the technology background. So if we can offer the foundational skills, the Golisano Institute just came to Buffalo, right? Who better to prepare people to move into those kinds of
advanced kind of career opportunities than BCAT.
Well, Jean Burkhardt, thanks for having us here.
Thank you.
At the Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology, or do you prefer to be calling it BCAT?
BCAT.
BCAT?
Yeah.
All right.
Or BCAT.
Gina Burkhardt with us on What's Next at BCAT, the Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology. Now, there was another part to our tour that was conducted by one of my co-hosts here on What's Next, Akua Menzedu. We'll have that for you coming up on a later program of What's Next. I also want to thank Jennifer McCosey of the Buffalo School Board for joining us on part one of today's program. This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members. And from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.